Jnanam Teham Savijnanam.
Jnanam Teham Savijnanam.
Idam Bhaksham Yasheshataha.
Idam Bhaksham Yasheshataha.
Yajgyataneha Bhoyon Yaj.
Yajgyataneha Bhoyon
Yaj. Yatavyam Avashishyate.
Yatavyam Avashishyate.
Jnanam Teham Savijnanam.
Jnanam Teham Savijnanam.
Idam Bhaksham Yasheshataha. Yajgyataneha Bhoyon Yaj.
Yajgyataneha Bhoyon Yaj.
Yatavyam Avashishyate.
Yatavyam Avashishyate.
I'll read the word to word because each word is important in these Bhagavad Gita verses. Jnanam. Phenomenal knowledge. Hey, unto you. Aham. I. Sa. With. Vijnanam.
Numinous knowledge.
Idam.
This.
Vakshami. Shall explain. Asheshataha. In full. Yat. Which? Jyatva. Knowing. Na.
Not.
Iha. In this world. Hoyaha.
Further.
Anyat.
Anything more.
Jyatavyam. Knowable. Avashishyate.
Remains.
Translation, I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. Thus, this being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Complete knowledge includes knowledge of the phenomenal world, the spirit behind it, and the source of both of them. This is transcendental knowledge. The Lord wants to explain the above-mentioned system of knowledge because Arjuna is Krishna's confidential devotee and friend. In the beginning of the fourth chapter, this explanation was given by the Lord, and it is again confirmed here. Colon. Which explanation? Complete knowledge can be achieved only by the devotee of the Lord in disciplic succession directly from the Lord. Therefore, one should be intelligent enough to know the source of all knowledge, who is the cause of all causes, and the only object for meditation in all types of yoga practice. When the cause of all causes becomes known, then everything knowable becomes known, and nothing remains unknown. That's a nice sentence. I'll read it again. When the cause of all causes becomes known, then everything noble becomes known, and nothing remains unknown. The Vedas, Mundaka Upanishad, say, Kasmin hu bhagavo vijyata sarvam idam vijyatam bhavatiti. That's the end of the purport. Didn't even give a translation. One who knows the cause of all causes knows everything. And then, just to emphasize, there's nothing further that remains unknown. So, as mentioned, the word idam is in this verse. This idam is a pronoun. It is referring to, well, it's referring to the what Krishna declares in the first verse that he's going to explain. He makes a commitment or a vow or a promise. I shall explain how the message of the last verse of the sixth chapter can be accomplished. So the last verse of the sixth chapter is Shraddhavan Bhajate Yomam Samayukta Tamomataha. So that's the topmost, the uttama form of yoga is that by which one with faith engages in the undivided devotional service of Krishna. So to explain that, one has to have a proper idea of the elements, what faith is, what Mam or Krishna is, and what the process of worshipping him, or Shraddhavan Bhajate Yoma, what that is, what bhakti is. So this is the middle six chapters, really in short, is what is bhakti? In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he describes that these middle six chapters, beginning with what we're hearing here, is bhakti, and prior is nishkam karma, which of course many things are taught or explained, but a primary and essential message of all of that is how to work without attachment to work, or the fruits of work. And said that the solution is be attached to Krishna and work for Krishna. But the principle of detached work, and then in the final six chapters, further details of knowledge about things already explained, or jnana, and the middle section is bhakti. And the middle section of bhakti is the most valuable part, and the other parts are embellishments of and supported by bhakti, not the other way around. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives this explanation that he gives three metaphors to show why bhakti is in the middle. He says that when you have something that's very valuable, some family heirloom, you don't leave it out by the front gate. Of course, here we don't even have gates. And you don't put it in your backyard. Here we have backyards. You put it in the middle of the house because it's valuable. Similarly, bhakti is in the middle because of its value. And then another example is when there's a procession. Where does the VIP in that procession go? It goes in the middle. Doesn't go in the front, doesn't go at the end, goes in the middle. So proceeding and following bhakti are the other parts of Bhagavad Gita, but the most important part is in the middle. And then the third metaphor or comparison is the parts of the house. What's the most important part of the house? It's that which holds the house up. You say, you know, like for an A-frame house, it's the central support beam. It's not the doors and the windows and the the parts of the interior, nor is it the roof. It's those things are useless without the support beam. So the main support beam is right in the middle. And similarly, bhakti is right in the middle. It's the most important part. In a broader sense, everything in Bhagavad Gita is bhakti. But there's this emphasis and that emphasis, and there's bhakti throughout. But it's compact and compressed in the middle six chapters. Just a little fun saying this and thinking of something that Satyaraj Prabhu shared with me. Maybe some of you, does anybody here doesn't know who Satyaraj is? Like, at least in theory? Okay. Satyaraj Prabhu is a disciple of Prabhupada who, by his own choosing, he has been interacting with academia as his service, with his own inner purpose is to help people who are shapers of thought because of being professors and intellectuals, shapers of the world of people in general, to help them get a proper conception of bhakti and specifically Srila Prabhupada. That's been his life mission. And he's good at it. In fact, he's so good at it that although he doesn't even have a college education, it was like, yay, when this happened. The publishers of academic books approached him and requested him to author a book on for world religion courses on Hinduism. He doesn't have a college degree. But he's the editor, compiler of a textbook on what is Hinduism. And for him it was a triumph, because then he could explain, you know, in addition to the other things, he could explain Vaishnavism properly, because unless one is a devotee, you're not going to get Vaishnavism correct. You're going to think something incorrect and make a textbook, and then thousands and thousands and generations of people will study something that's incorrect about what Vaishnavism is. So one of the things that he's done to kind of schmooze and hang out, you know, like his journal of Vaishnava studies, where he gets professors from all over the world that have a name to contribute, and he became so successful that Oxford University agreed to take up, we'll put it under our name, Oxford University Press. So, you know, he has a gift from Krishna to do that kind of work. He's good. So one of the things that he would do regularly is attend the, I think it's called the American Academy of Religion Conference, AAR. And he would go and hang out with, not, they weren't just American, they were worldwide religion professors. And from the early days, like, you know, many, many years ago, there were two that kind of rose to prominence, where they were, their specialty was critiquing Bhagavad Gita presentations. So way back when they started this, so now they're like established, you know, in the academic world. These are the foremost authorities on critiquing Bhagavad Gita presentations. So when Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita came out, they gave it a thumbs down. Because Prabhupada did things that scholars, it's a no-no for scholars, you know, this word means, instead of this, it means that. You know, the synonyms. And then taking the text that doesn't exactly, just like stitch together the synonyms and stitch it together in a way that's awkward and clumsy and, you know, but it's like academically precise. The Prabhupada didn't do those things. So they would give it a thumbs down. And consistently did like that. And so as Satyaraj would go to the American Academy of, he was sharing this with me, he says, so it's, it fits, it's nice. They would, you know, they respected him and he would be polite with them, but they would, it would always be thumbs down. They didn't like get into it, but it was like, you know how academic people are. So, some years back, I can't remember the number, you know, five, six, some number of years back, he shared with me that one American Academy of Religion conference, separately both of them approached him and said, you know what, after all these years of reviewing so many Bhagavad Gita presentations, I have come to the conclusion that your Bhaktivedanta Swami's presentation is the best. And the reason is that he gave the essence at every step. He wasn't so much fastidious or stuck on it had to be, you know, academically da-da-da-da, you know, precise. But he was rather giving the essence from the very beginning and throughout. He simply presented the essence of Bhagavad Gita. No, they weren't necessarily Vaishnavas and personalists, but they were appreciating rather from an academic point of view how he was giving the essence throughout from his bhakti perspective, you know, from their academic view. And then, you know, both of them separately, independently said the same thing. And Sanjuraj wanted to share that with me, so I'm sharing it with you. It's a breakthrough. So whether academics appreciate it or not, it may help us to also appreciate what Prabhupada was doing. You know, there are different parts to the message, just like in the purport of 7.1 Bhagavad Gita, in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport commentary. He says it's important to understand bhakti, to understand also the process of karma and jnana. So one might wonder, well, why? Bhakti stands alone. But bhakti, it's a subset of what bhakti is, includes detached work. So therefore, in some cases, Prabhupada would use karma yoga and bhakti yoga like, you know, just two different kinds of pepper. You know, like the same thing. Although there is a distinction of meaning, he was taking the essence. In its mature stage, karma yoga becomes bhakti. Or detached work is a subset of bhakti, either way. And similarly, the jnana aspect of, like here, I'm speaking of this because that's what text 2 is. Jnanam savijnanam. So knowledge and realized knowledge, or knowledge of that which is phenomenal, meaning this world, and numinous, meaning the world of spirit. So this is the nature of what Krishna is going to be describing. Of course, everything that is both in the category of matter and spirit, we'll find out in this chapter 7. After describing the eightfold separated energies, Vina Prakriti Ashtada, and aside from that, the Apara Prakriti, the transcendental realm of spirit, Krishna says, both are my energies. They're his energies, and he's in control of both of them, and there isn't anything beyond. So this world is made up of matter and spirit, and the controller of both. And the controller of both is Krishna. So to know Krishna, one needs to know matter and spirit, because they're part of Krishna. Not separate from Krishna, they're part of Krishna, so to know Krishna means to know them. But then you can say the other way. If you know Krishna, certainly you know that, because that's what the purport is saying. By knowing Krishna, you know there's nothing further to be known. Now, we'll go back to the last verse of chapter 6. Madgatenantaratmanam Shadhavan Bhagateyo Mam. So the indication is Madgatain Antaratma. What's the Antaratma? Super soul. It's soul within. Is it soul within the soul? There's the soul within the body, and there's the soul within the soul, the supreme soul. And so the topmost form of yoga is to know the supreme soul. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, says that in the first 6 chapters, the swarup, or the tattva, of the living entity is described. And now the tattva or the swarup of Krishna is going to be described. Because in order to perform devotional service, you have to fix your mind on Krishna. By fixing your mind on Krishna, man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. So Krishna is disclosing himself. This promise that he makes in chapter 7, text number 1 is, please hear from me, O son of Pritha, how? By practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me. Yeah, so you have to know who me is, who Krishna is. So then text 2, now this knowledge, idam, is going to include this, these two parts, phenomenal and numinous, beyond which there's nothing to be known. That the source of them both includes, and that's just of this world. I like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's and his commentaries. Or through his commentaries we can understand something about him. But he says these two, Vigyana, actually it's also holiday, Vigyana, Jnana and Vigyana. Jnana means, normally when we hear the word jnana, it's knowledge of spirit, so to know what spirit, something like, you know, the first part of chapter 2, which is the distinction between matter and spirit, you know, transcendental knowledge, the distinction between matter and spirit. Over here is matter and over here is spirit. We belong in the category of spirit. That's transcendental knowledge. And by transcendental knowledge, one can then be detached from a material conception of life, and with it all the yuckiness that goes with the material conception of life, you know, attachments and bewilderments and illusion and all those things. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says here in this case it means Krishna and his energies. Specifically, he says it's his energies are what he says in a few more verses later, 7-6. It's his, that the both material and spiritual energies. And Vijnana refers to Krishna in the spiritual world beyond material creation, beyond which there's nothing further to be known. There's this realm and there's the spiritual realm, and Krishna is going to disclose those things. Not in detail. The Bhagavatam gives, you know, the graduate study version of those things. But so that, and Ramanujacharya in his commentary says, Vijnana means Krishna's form, his swarup, his spiritual form. Because if you're going to madgatenantaratmana, if you're going to fix your mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as the text 1 says, the mind absorbed in me, practicing yoga in full consciousness with me, with mind absorbed and attached to me, that the who Krishna is important. And if you go a little bit further, I've been studying, some of you know this, Sri Brahma Samhita. You know that little skinny book that's so heavy you can't pick it up. And in text 37, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has a 12-page purport in
Bhakti Siddhanta language, it's way up there, where he's helping the leader understand rasa tattva, and specifically to understand Krishna's dealings with the gopis, because 37 is about Radha and her, the expansions of her form, the gopis. And you know, because a lot of people have wrong understandings or misunderstandings of that subject matter, he wants to make it very clear. And so with great reference or extensive reference to Jiva Goswami, because he also wanted to make that clear. He made commentary on Sri Brahma Samhita, which is the basis of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary, which is in Bengali, which was the basis of Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary in English. It says, is Jiva Goswami making very clear rasa. And so it goes into details, but it connects with this verse, 7.2. Sorry, Bhagavad Gita isn't very interesting. Stories, you can do stories tomorrow. The technical language of vibhav and anubhav, and within vibhav there's it's two parts. Anyway, it's a science, so it gets technical, and you know, even a kid, the adults want to run away with speaking to kids. But there's ashraya and vishaya. There's the abode of love and the object of love. Those are two parts of alambana. And then there's the stimulations of love, udipan. The stimulations of love are aspects of Krishna, like Krishna's playing his flute, or Krishna's glance, or Krishna's smile, or aspects of Krishna that when the abode of love experiences or even hears them, they stimulate ecstatic love. Just yesterday evening I was speaking at the Sunday feast on how does bhakti begin? Because he's explaining how does bhakti, what is bhakti? It's, you know, shodhavan bhajate yomam madhyate nantaratmana. He's explaining bhakti. So how does bhakti begin? In short, it begins with sadhusanga. But there's wonderful verses where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita, explaining to both Rupa and Sanatana Goswami separately, describes how through sadhusanga bhakti begins. You know, it's really simple just to say one is carrying bhakti, and then one spills a little bhakti on somebody that they bump into. So they get, you know, a little covered with bhakti. But there's a science to it. And it is describing glories of Krishna, or the qualities of Krishna, or the form of Krishna, or something in relation to Krishna. Like Muchukunda, one of the verses that Lord Chaitanya refers to is a verse from chapter 51 of Canto 10, where Muchukunda describes how he got the good fortune of seeing Krishna. Tell me, would you like to see Krishna? I mean, see Krishna? So it happened because of, he says, to Krishna, because of the good fortune of having some association with a devotee. In his case, it was Gargamuni. Gargamuni, an astrologer of the Yadu dynasty, among other things, foretold Muchakunda, a member of Ikshvaku dynasty, that he would see Krishna. And he described something about Krishna. And so he was having a wow experience. Wow, I'm going to see Krishna. And he meditated on Krishna, and when he, based on what he heard, and he prayed to Krishna extensively and intensely and very sincerely. And when Krishna then shows himself before Muchakunda in the cave, he said, because you prayed so intensely, so sincerely, I've come before you. Wow. And Muchakunda says, because of an association of devotee, now I've had this good fortune. So the association of a devotee brings the descending mercy of Krishna into one's life. And of course, in proportion to one's eagerness to receive Krishna's mercy. So maybe we just want to be comfortable. But maybe we want something more than comfortable. Maybe we want Krishna's association, comfortable or not. And those that have that aspiration that comes from, this is now the word faith, Shraddhavan Bhajate Yomam, Shraddhavan Bhajate Yomam, that faith is the gift that the devotee gives to another. There's faith in Krishna, faith in the teachings about Krishna, faith in the ultimate reality of Krishna. Here's another little Brahma Samhita message. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, following Jiva Goswami, says in the beginning of text 32 of Brahma Samhita, so that the Govinda prayers begin just before that. 29, 30, 31. In 32, Bhaktisiddhanta says that Lord Brahma knows that there are some people who hear the glories of Krishna and think it's imagination or fabrication or mythology or something. You know, Krishna lifts a hill, Krishna shows Mother Jasoda the cosmic manifestation inside his mouth, and things like that. You know, it's a nice story, but it's just imagination. So, to address that mentality, Brahma composes these four verses, 32, 33, 34, 35, because the earlier ones are describing Chintamani, Prakata Sadma. So, what's that place where everything is made of Chintamani, and there's Kalpa Vriksha trees everywhere, and millions of goddesses of fortune, and oh, come on. So, those who hear those descriptions of Krishna and Krishna's abode need to have a little cold water when they're thinking, oh, come on. So, the glories of Krishna, they serve as stimulations for love for Krishna. Because that's what Madgate Nantaratmana means. When you understand who is Krishna, it's wow. It's, you know, if you're Muchakunda, it's you want Krishna's association. And then another reference that Lord Chaitanya gives is King Nimi. When he meets the Navayogendras, it's 11th canto, chapter 2. The Navayogendras, they're sons of Rishabdev, these nine of his 100 sons. The most well known one is Bharat Maharaj. So he had nine brothers that were Uttama Adhikari Bhaktas, Mahabhagavata Vaishnava, the topmost people. They just traveled not only over the surface of the earth, they traveled throughout the universe like Narada. They, you know, go, go, go. They didn't even have a Veena. They just were gifted in that way to be in transcendence and give their association to others. So they came to a place where King Nimi was performing a sacrifice under the guidance of some brahmanas, and in came these nine brothers, effulgent like so many suns. I mean, like suns in the sky. And he just stopped the sacrifice and stood up and stopped everything, went to them and paid obeisances and expressed his intuitive understanding that you must be direct associates of the personality of Godhead. And it's through association of persons like you that perfection of life can be attained. So the seed of bhakti comes by that association. Either, in this case, by Krishna himself, or by the disciplic succession, just like it's described in the purport. In the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said how he taught this knowledge previously to the sun god Devaswan and so forth. And now he's speaking it directly to Arjuna. Same thing. So hearing from Krishna or hearing in disciplic succession from Krishna, the same, not less, the same potential is there. I've heard Prabhupada in lectures, maybe eight different lectures, maybe more, where he said, sometimes people say, and I've heard this in the course of my speaking, oh, there's no way to achieve perfection like Arjuna did, because Arjuna heard directly from Krishna. And that's never going to happen for me, so it's hopeless. And Prabhupada would then say, you know, no, it's not so, because one who hears the message of Krishna in the disciplic succession, Krishna is speaking. You with me? Krishna is like, so Krishna is speaking. It's, you know, the speaker's voice. Here's a little Prabhupada story, or experience. Once in Mayapur, during the Mayapur festival, when there were hundreds of devotees, then it was like a big number, now it's thousands of devotees, but then it was hundreds of devotees from around the world who came to take part in the Mayapur festival. And one year Prabhupada chose to speak on those 11 introductory verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita each morning, one each morning. The essence of Chaitanya Charitamrita is packed up in those verses. He was unpacking them for us. And at one point, he spoke this very same message. And he said it three times. He said, when Krishna says, surrender unto me, and the spiritual master says, surrender unto Krishna, their speaking is the same Krishna is speaking. And he said it again. And then he said it again. And then he didn't get very far in the next sentence, and he went into a state of trance. Right on the Vyasa sign. His eyes closed, all the muscles of his face slackened, kind of like hung, and his body just started moving like this, like a tree in the wind, silent. We didn't know what to do. We waited some time, and then when devotee stood up, took the mridanga, and started singing very softly, Hare Krishna. And it seemed like forever. And then eventually Prabhupada opened his eyes, looked around the room, got off of the asasan, and went to his room. That was the end of class. On this point, that when Krishna says, surrender unto me, and the devotee repeats Krishna's words, surrender unto Krishna, their speaking is non-different, Krishna is speaking. So, what Krishna is going to disclose, he's doing this, I'm going to now explain how to fix your consciousness upon me, absorb your mind and thoughts and attachment to me. I'm going to explain how to do it. So then the very next verse is this one. This knowledge, idam, of everything jnanam and vijnanam, phenomenal and numinous, or in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation, the energies of Krishna within creation, material energies and the soul that are moving about within this creation, and the form of Krishna beyond this material creation, so that one can fix one's mind upon Him. These are, you can say, stimulations of ecstatic love. Of course, there's more detail to that in the Bhagavatam and some of the other Vaishnava literatures. But the purpose of the Vaishnava literature is to understand Krishna. And if you understand Krishna, you're the knower of all things. By understanding the cause, at least, one will understand that which you need to know to go back to Krishna. Remember one lecture Prabhupada was giving, at the end somebody raised the question, Swamiji, I've heard that one who becomes a qualified devotee of the Lord, he becomes the knower of all things. So can you tell me how many windows there are in the Empire State Building? And Prabhupada, without hesitating, leaned forward and said, can you tell me how many drops of water there are in the mirage? And then Prabhupada went on to explain that what it means that Krishna, that a devotee becomes the knower of all things, is all that which one needs in order to carry out one's devotional service, Krishna makes arrangement for one to know that. Not trivia. How many grains of sand are there in the Sahara Desert? How many atoms are there in the universe? There are verses that say one may be able even to know that, but they'll still not know Krishna. And so that's not the knower of all things. Nor does the knower of all things mean all trivia questions. You're a walking encyclopedia or something. You're omniscient, you're super soul. That's not what it means. But one knows that which is requisite, or what will take you back to Godhead, just as Krishna says in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Yena mamo piyanti te tesham satati yoktanam bhajatam piti purvatam dami bodhi yom yom tam. What's the rest? Yena mamo piyanti te, the means by which you can attain Him. But that's 10th chapter, but some of these little six, it's the nutshell verses. He's now, he's saying, I'm going to explain all of this to you, so that you can know me in full, or know the absolute truth in full. And by knowing the absolute truth in full, there's nothing further to be known. And then you can fix your mind upon madgatenantaratmana, shradhavan, without doubt. Or in this verse, asheshataha, in full, in fullness. Now we can't, the tiny living entity cannot possibly know everything about the unlimited. The limited cannot possibly know everything of the unlimited. That's very logical. But that which we need to know, and as we hear more and more, whether we have a good memory or not, it's stimulating our love for the unlimited. It's Prabhupada once said, Krishna consciousness is very simple. God is very great. We are very small. We should serve Him. That is Krishna consciousness. So to understand how great God is, that they do not know. And so to understand how great God is, He's the source of everything. I mean, how can we even conceive of, try to close your eyes and think of the cause of all causes without knowing Krishna consciousness? I mean, even to think the thought, it's like really abstract. And without Krishna consciousness, it becomes something impersonal. But that's to fix your mind on the impersonal, as Krishna says, very difficult for those who are embodied. We're embodied. We're conditioned souls. To think of, to fix your mind upon the impersonal, very difficult. What to speak of, the real happiness that we're hankering for, that is being connected with the supreme happiness, Krishna, isn't there. We don't have Krishna's help. Who wants that which is without Krishna anyways? For a devotee, that's not something we want. We want whatever is with Krishna. Wherever Krishna and Krishna's devotees are, that's what we want. Krishna's happiness. So the awakening of that desire to enter into that realm of always striving and hankering for the happiness of Krishna, that's what's going to be presented in these chapters, 7 through 12. Makes you want to read the rest, right? So any discussion? Yes.
So you were talking about how, like, the seed of bhakti is planted by sadhu sangha,
yes,
by association.
Yes.
And I was wondering how is that correlated to Harinam Sankirtan?
How is it correlated?
Or, like, you know, does Harinam Sankirtan help in that process of, like, you know, because you're not necessarily telling someone about Krishna.
You're not telling someone about Krishna, but you're giving them Krishna. Now, let me expand on that. Because I ranted a little bit the other morning on this topic. Where, what does, when you go in Harinam Sankirtan, what happens to the person who hears? They're contacting Krishna directly through sound. Krishna, name of Krishna and Krishna are not different. They're in direct contact with Krishna. So there's a direct kindness. But that contact with Krishna directly, according to our acharyas, needs also some bandhagyan in order to go further. So with that purification through, maybe they haven't a clue what chanting is. To them it's whatever, it's just a musical performance of some kind by some people who really like that particular type of music, and they dress a little differently than we do. But it's still, the sound vibration is Krishna, and as that cleansing takes place by contact with the Supreme Pure through his sound vibration of his holy name, some attraction for, you know, Krishna, although they don't know what or who Krishna is, the opportunity is created. And so when then they want to come and chant some more, or we offer them some literature and they take some literature, then some bandhagyan is necessary to support the nourishment of the attraction for Krishna, the cleansing that takes place. So they go together. The giving of knowledge and the broadcasting of the holy name. And generally when we go on Harinam, we also have some literature. Or at least, you know, one of the standard things that Harinam parties commonly do is they chant for some time, and then if people are gathered, then they say a few words to explain what's going on over here. And it's something very basic. Or like what Prabhupada would do at Ratha Yatra. Kirtan, and then on the stage explaining something. Like that. Whether it's a written form or the spoken form, or the devotee that's answering, hey, what's this? Oh, look, this is what it is. We give them a little what's what. It's necessary to support the benefit that comes from cutting out somebody again. Yeah.
Can I ask you a question? Does deity worship play a role in that?
Of course.
What are the depths of
What's this catch for?
The depths?
Yes, sambandha jnana.
I know what she's the sambandha jnana, but what's the word depths?
Depth.
D-E-P-T-H or S-T-E-P-S?
D-E-P-T-H.
Depths. What's the depths of sambandha jnana? That's a nice question. In relation to deity worship specifically, or just in general?
Because I feel like it's difficult to answer to me, you know, what is sambandha if you're serving Krishna? It's not sufficient. I mean, it's not sufficient.
Well, sambandha in a broad sense means relationship. So all things, so here we are in a nice house, and there's things in the house, and there's the house and there's people in the house, and so what's the relationship of all things, not just me but all things, because I'm part of all things. There's a relationship of all things with their source of emanation. And so some of the things that are in chapter 7 are matter and spirit, so that's part of the sambandha again. It's like we've been discussing this last several days, so I'll just share the metaphor. It's like a platform or foundation upon which with it's a spiritual conception of what's what, so that I can then act, I can carry out those activities in devotion to Krishna. I can act in that relationship of things and myself included. Like there can be movement towards the goal if I have a proper foundation of spiritual conception. So it's establishing, you know, like getting a big eraser out and addressing, put the material conception over here, work with the spiritual conception so I can know what's what, and then act in my relationship with Krishna in relation to all things. And then unfolding in the prayojana, the fruit of my own God. So I want to, we're being taught the soul's happiness is found in love of God. To get there, I need the foundation, the spiritual conception, the platform on which to move, and then that spiritual movement can take place through the activities of bhakti towards the goal. So that's the purpose of it. It's not just a conception that says my constitutional position is the service of Krishna. Certainly that's there. There's much, much, much more to sambandha jnana than that. It's, you know, the whole shebang. That we're, you know, without that spiritual conception, we're seeing in a very, very different way. You know, in a mode of passion, mode of ignorance way, and finding unhappiness when we want happiness. So it's removing the source of that unhappiness or suffering, and removing the ignorance and replacing it with proper sambandha again. So then I can know, huh? Yeah, what's what? Like, what, you know, including myself and you, and, you know, and stuff. And how to see that with a spiritual conception. And not just theoretically, exactly. One of my favorite passages in Bhagavad Gita is from... Are you familiar enough with Bhagavad Gita to know what Bodhi Yoga is? Bodhi Yoga? In chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks what the distinction between the soul and matter is called...
Sankhya
Yoga, thank you. My mind just drew a blank. Sankhya, analysis of matter and spirit. So Krishna says, now I described Sankhya, now I'm going to describe Bodhi Yoga. Buddhi is spiritual intelligence. The other, not, you know, different than the other kind, the material intelligence kind. The spiritual intelligence, he says in chapter 10, is how to come to me. I'm going to describe that kind of yoga, guided by spiritual intelligence, how to come to me. And so later you can look text 41 of chapter 2. Krishna says, Vyavasayatmika Buddhir. Vyavasayatmika Buddhir. Eke ha kurumandana. Well, one has one eka, one goal, one focus. That's Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. Diversity of activity, no problem. One focus, Krishna. Attaining and satisfying and loving Krishna. Diversity, no problem. One thing in your heart. And when that's not there, Krishna says, then one's intelligence is many-branched. We say spaced out. Very unfocused. And in the purport, twice, Prabhupada says, the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is... I'll read it. The highest perfection of Krishna consciousness is renunciation of the material conception of life. Wow. Not like attaining love of God, or going back to Godhead, or all those nice things. It's renunciation of the material conception of life. You know, having proper sambandhagyan can give you that by acting with the proper what's what conception. Of course, with mercy and sincere effort. But without the foundation, that goal isn't good. So making that transition, there's just this nice quote from Bhaktisiddhanta, one can make no greater progress than this simple step of going beyond the stranglehold we have on the material conception of life and letting go and adopting the material conception of life, the spiritual conception of life. It's the foundation. It's not the end. And then at the end of the purport, after this beautiful purport, the whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body, not theoretically, but practically, where there is no longer a chance of sense gratification manifested in fruitive activity. So not like theoretical, but you know, the real thing. Where you're operating with a spiritual conception. That's Buddha Yoga. You have to have sambandhagyan for that. Now Krishna will guide it. It's not just by reading the book, it's through devotion. Krishna will guide that. And so here's the scripture, so Krishna will take you there if you want to go there. That's what sambandhagyan is for. And he's promising in this verse that we read that he's going to give that. In the previous verse, you know, how to do the Abhideya part requires the Sambandha part to do it properly. Does that help? Okay. Someone else? Yes.
Maharaj was saying like Sadhu Sangha gives us the root for seed for the bhakti.
Yes.
But when we are in Sadhu Sangha or like when we are in association of devotees, like what should be our mood or like
mood of service.
Okay. And
inquisitive, jigyasa, eager to hear and understand. That's what devotees do. Katiyantavsh chamam nityam. Toshyant saraman teacher. That's what devotees do. Eager to hear and share. Guryam Akhyati Pritchati. That's what it is. Yeah? A little hesitation.
yes, I'm clear, but still, like, when we say, like, mood of service, like, I was just, like, thinking, like, Maharaj, like, maybe I may not understand to the level how much.
That's okay. Just hear and inquire and serve. Because I've been studying Brahma Samhita, my thoughts are filled with Brahma Samhita. So, Prabhupada spoke about Bhakti Siddhanta. That, here's the context. Some devotees wanted to know from Prabhupada, is it okay to print parts of Sri Brahma Samhita in Bhakti Godhead magazine? And Prabhupada said yes, but only print a page or two at a time. Otherwise their brains will be puzzled. And then he said about himself that when hearing from my Guru Maharaj, my brain was puzzled. But I had faith that I should just sit and listen. Even if I didn't understand and my brain was puzzled. Because I knew by sitting there, I would become purified. So don't, you know, the qualification is not that you have, you know, some academic capacity. That's not the qualification. Some persons may not. That's not a qualification or disqualification. Maybe, if anything, academic capacity can lead to pride. So then, in that sense, it's a potential disqualifier. So don't worry. I'm not always understanding everything. Kamal Krishnamurti, speaking on this, said, when they were in India, sometimes Prabhupada, depending upon the audience, he would speak in Hindi or sometimes in Bengali, and they couldn't understand anything. So they wanted to get up and leave, and Prabhupada said, no, stay. Even if you don't understand, just the sound vibration, hearing the sound vibration in a language you don't even understand, it will be terrifying. Wow, right. And he said, we found it was true. We didn't understand what he said, but we felt purified by being in his presence and hearing his sound vibration. So it's not an intellectual exercise. It's a spiritual exercise, hearing and awakening the soul. Now, it's nice to hear in your language. And it's nice to hear with language that matches your vocabulary. But Prabhupada, when he asked about editing, he said no. Editing, but, you know, Bhakti Siddhanta's writing so that the audience could understand. No. He might lose something in the meaning, so just leave it as it is. And his message to us, Prabhupada's message to us, is if there's some passage that you don't understand, he was referring specifically to nectar devotion, but in other contexts he said the same. If you don't understand, then read it again. And if you don't understand after reading it again, then read it again. And by purification, and isn't it that we've all had the experience, some things that maybe we didn't understand, and after some, you know, whatever it is, months or years or whatever, oh, that's what was meant. And then some more time, oh, not only that, but something else. You know, when the light goes on, then you can see things better. So let the light go on. And with faith, just tread have on. Okay. Something else? Okay. Yes.
The verse which we have discussed, where here Lord Krishna is saying that after knowing this, there is nothing else to be known. So often this verse is quoted in primary teaching that how this Sanatana Dharma is greater than the other dharmas, where Krishna is rightly saying that after knowing this, there is nothing else to be known. So, my point of view, like you said, that Krishna is preaching to Arjuna, who was the most qualified but for us, so how to get the pure essence of Bhagavad Gita, because there might not be something that we will actually understand. So how to get the essence?
Through the association of qualified souls. So for us, that most qualified soul is our founder Acharya, who, when he prepared his Bhaktivedanta purports, he consulted various commentaries, principally two, Vishwanath and Baladev, but others also, and then assimilated them and presented them to his audience, the contemporary audience. And sometimes he makes reference to, by name, this Acharya, that Acharya, but otherwise he just, like, he made baby food for us. And within the baby food is all the different other things. Just like, you know, very smooth and easy to digest. And when one, I've had this experience of going to the commentaries of the Acharyas that he made baby food from, and it what they say is there in what Prabhupada says in very simple language. It strengthens my faith in our spiritual master, our founder Acharya, by doing that. It's not like, oh, he didn't say that. He gave us the essence, as these, in a way that's, you know, important for a very broad audience. He was, his audience was the world, not just, you know, America, where he came, but his vision was the world, which, you know, his books were translated in different languages in the world. So when you have a really diverse audience, it's important to get the essence and knowing, you know, the forces that are playing upon people at that time. So that's best, is, you know, through the association of devotees, and those devotees also who have carefully and deeply studied the teachings and are exemplifying the teachings. That's how we can get, you know, the answer to your question. We need that association. Okay, I think we're done. Nothing? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Wow, it's 9 o'clock.